Well, I think part of the sourcing process to me is the most exciting, because you know, you rent a car and you drive through the south of France, and you know, you obviously have some appointments set up, but you know, some of the most exciting things happen when you're just kind of winging it. And you meet a farmer at, you know, a wine fair, and he's, you know, he says, well, come back to my estate, and you're not quite sure where you're going, and you follow a guy in a Peugeot, you know, up a rambling hill, and all of a sudden you come across either a castle or a shack in the woods, and the guy's making wine out of the back of his, you know, house, or he could be making wine out of a major estate. You know, looks are deceiving, but you want to assume that someone with a very established chateau is making good wine. But 9 times out of 10, the guy out of the garage who's like super passionate is making these better wines, and they're maybe more rustic and less polished. So to me, like the restaurateur, the sommelier, this story resonates with them about the small farmer, you know, the guy who's making wine on small quantities, 80 cases, 100 cases. Those are the things exciting to Barterhouse, and hopefully the things exciting to our clients.
This is Carol Butler.
And Bernie Wides.
And we're here to do another naturalist show. And that music was sort of suggestive of the topic. Good choice, Jack. That was sort of a little bit reminiscent of mosquitoes flying and
right,
buzzing
flying
around.
Buzzing
it had
around,
that
right.
Kind of energy. I like that. Mm. And we have a new assistant engineer named Carlos, who helped me right away. So the show is about mosquitoes, and I had read that mosquito is from the Spanish or Portuguese word meaning little fly, but I hadn't been able to figure it out. And Carlos said mosca is the word for fly in Spanish, and ito is the diminutive, which
okay.
I didn't think about that. Now
little fly.
So it's mosquito, little fly.
Oh,
so
good. Okay.
That's the first thing we learned here. So I'm going to talk about mosquitoes, and I hope you'll bear with me since I'm deeply into bed bugs. What's very interesting I did a proposal for a book with a guy named Joe Conlon, who is a mosquito expert, and so I have a lot of material about mosquitoes too, and they're very different developmentally, biologically, from bed bugs, and that interests me. So you'll have to bear with me, because I can't help but making comparisons, and also we have to make some comparisons to butterflies and also to bees.
Okay, one quick question, Carol. How's the book coming along? Did you hear from the publisher?
We got very good feedback from the publisher.
Oh, good, terrific.
That it was critical, but constructively critical. Mm-hmm. And so we are re-engineering it a little bit. The scientific reviewer was absolutely right in that the tone, it was a little bit uneven in tone. Very good criticism, so very positive.
Good. So it's going forward.
We're moving along, yes.
Good. Okay, good.
Okay. So there are about 3,500 species of mosquitoes around the world, except in, and I'm giving Bernie a question, where are there no mosquitoes?
In Antarctica.
Correct. That's always the answer, folks. If they ever say something is everywhere in the world, except, the answer is always Antarctica.
It's the same for butterflies.
Right. So I ask you easy questions, not like what you ask me. Okay. So there are 176 species, more or less, in North America. And so I'm going to talk, it's very hard to talk about insects because there are so many of them. So whatever I say, you have to take it with a grain of salt, because it always varies from species to species. Mm-hmm. But we have to generalize, otherwise there are 3,500 species, we'd be talking forever. So some mosquitoes are specialists, like a lot of insects, they're blood feeders, right? Not all of them are blood feeders, but the ones that are, some are specialists and feed only on birds, some feed only on reptiles, some feed on humans, Only a small number actually feed on humans, but of course those are the ones we'll talk mostly about. Some feed on cattle and horses, so they vary. Some are generalists, and the generalists will feed on any warm-blooded animal. So humans came into the world, which was already full of blood-sucking insects. That in itself is interesting to me.
Okay.
Mosquitoes have been around for about 170 million years, is what they say. At which time, of course, they were feeding on dinosaurs.
Oh, right? So they were specialists too, right. Dinosaur feeding.
Well, some of them.
Oh, maybe they were generalists. We don't know.
Right, we don't know.
Because the mosquitoes are still here, but the dinosaurs aren't.
And we don't have a lot of fossils of mosquitoes. We have a fossil of a mosquito similar to the modern species, which is from 79 million years ago. And there's an older fossil from a sister species from 90 to 100 million years ago.
Hmm. What about specimens in amber?
Those are in amber. That's where these fossils are. Yeah, they're in amber. And what's interesting is there's a genus that doesn't drink blood. Toxorhynchites, something like that.
Named after somebody.
They don't drink blood. And they include the largest mosquitoes, right? And their larvae eat other mosquito larvae. So they're used sometimes in mosquito control. However, the interesting thing is that's the mosquito that was embedded in amber that they were using in the movie Jurassic Park to extract the DNA of the dinosaur, right? That was in the movie. But that's a mosquito that doesn't drink blood. This is one of those things that entomologists love. Like, look at that. They're trying to get blood from that mosquito, and that mosquito doesn't drink blood.
Just the females? Is it just
no,
the females?
No, in this species, neither of them drink blood.
Oh,
they don't all drink blood.
Oh, I see. That's why it was the wrong one to use
it
in the movie.
It was the wrong one altogether, right. But somebody got the idea. That's like in the conservatory, we constantly have people coming in with their children and saying, and here are the cocoons that the butterflies come out of. And you want to scream after a while because there's a children's book that says butterflies make cocoons, which is not true. Only moths make cocoons. But it's also propagated by this mistake in the book.
And that book, I think every kid in America.
Every kid.
That little book, what is it called? The Hungry Caterpillar?
The museum Friday working in the Butterfly Conservatory. I think six families came in. I happened to be standing near the pupa case, and six families came in showing the kids the butterfly cocoons.
Yeah, we should write to that guy if he's still
alive. It's hopeless. The book has sold millions of copies.
We should send the mosquitoes after him.
Right. So mosquitoes have been found. They're very diverse. 4,000 miles, I guess. 4,000 feet below ground in mines. Yes, feet. And 14,000 feet high in the Himalayas, there are mosquitoes. So they're different species, of course. They're in the order Diptera. I'll try to make this interesting because it's interesting to me. And Diptera means one pair of wings, right? Terra is wings.
Right.
And flies and mosquitoes are in there having one pair of wings. We know that butterflies have two pair of wings, but we'll get to that. And bedbugs are in Hemiptera, which also has two pair of wings, except bedbugs that feed on people don't have wings.
Okay.
It's complicated. Okay, so here's another interesting word. Mosquitoes are enterotheragoda, which means the wings develop inside. Bedbugs are exoterogoda, which means the wings develop on the outside, right? So in mosquitoes, their developmental process is that there's an egg, then there are larvae. The larvae come out of the egg like a caterpillar. Then there's a pupa. They pupate, and inside the pupa, they change from a caterpillar to a mosquito, and then the adult form is the imago.
Are they all in water?
The first three stages are in water. Again, I'm sure that not every species of mosquito develops in water, but the generalization is that the first three stages are aquatic, but they come to the surface to breathe, which is interesting.
Ah, yes.
The larvae and the pupa comes to the surface periodically to get some oxygen. And the advantage of this type of development is that, like with butterflies, the offspring don't compete with the adults for food because they're inhabiting different ecological niches, right? So the butterfly larva, caterpillars, moth larva, eat leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And the adults drink nectar, right, or fruit juices. And similarly here, the mosquito larva eat Bernie's favorite microscopic zooplankton.
Yeah.
That's what they eat. And right. The adults, of course, drink nectar and plant juices, sap, and blood.
Mm-hmm.
So that they're not competing. The adult mosquito emerges from the pupa as it floats on the water, which is interesting. And then just to make the parallel, the exoterragota, the bedbug development form, which is true of a lot of other insects as well, they don't have a pupal stage. There is an egg, and out of the egg comes a tiny, tiny, tiny little bedbug.
Mm.
And that's called a nymph. And the bedbug nymph, let me not get started on bedbugs because it's so interesting. The first nymph is so small it can fit between the pieces of a zipper, between the, the metal pieces. The teeth of a zipper.
Okay.
And they shed like a snake. They molt. And so there are five stages where the bug gets bigger and bigger. It sheds its exoskeleton and has a new one underneath, fills it in, and then sheds again.
So it's similar to the butterflies then. With the molting of the caterpillar stages.
Right. Because it doesn't metamorphose.
Oh, it doesn't. It's
a tiny, complete bug, without wings and without a reproductive system.
It just sheds its exoskeleton because it's getting bigger.
But it's right. Bigger. But it's a bug in each stage.
Right.
And then finally, the bed bug has five nymph stages. And in the adult stage, it finally has a reproductive system and wings. Except the common bedbug doesn't have wings.
Okay.
Common bedbug has shoulder pads. They're actually very cute.
That's good.
They're just...
Maybe they play football.
Little vestigial... That's what it looks like. Little vestigial pads.
Okay, what about the mosquitoes?
Back to mosquitoes. Okay.
Back to mosquitoes.
She's trying to get me not to talk about bedbugs. We'll get to the...
How do they make the noises, Karen?
We're getting to that.
Oh, okay.
Right. Okay. So, feeding is something very important. And then we'll talk about mating, my favorite subject. Most species of mosquitoes, only the female adult is a blood feeder, and she's an optional blood feeder, unlike bedbugs, which are obligate blood feeders, right?
They
That's all
blood.
They eat. But female mosquitoes also drink nectar and plant juices.
So they need the blood for what?
I'll get to that.
Oh, good.
The adult males are vegetarians. They never feed on blood. They just feed on plant juices and nectar. So they have to find somebody to. They need the blood. The females drink the blood in order to develop eggs. That's why they need the blood. I'm going to talk about that in a minute. But the first problem is locating a host. How do they find us?
Right.
Insects that are blood feeders. Have a very different lifestyles if you think about them. Not to belabor the bed bugs, but think about their lifestyle. They don't fly. They're sitting in a crack, right? And they wait for the host basically to come to them. They wait for the host. Things settle down. The host regularly comes to its nest or to the bed, and they don't have far to go.
That's the bed bugs.
Right. They live right nearby. Mosquitoes and flies move around a lot more. They have better vision, and they have more receptors on their antenna because they're sensitive to various environmental clues that tell them where the potential host is. I don't know how many antenna receptors, the total number of antenna receptors that mosquitoes have, but a stable fly, for example, has 5,000, where lice is a permanent ectoparasite, right? A louse has to stay on the body of the host. If it falls out of your hair, if you have head lice and it falls out of your head, it's going to die in a few hours because it has to stay in that temperature and humidity.
Warm, humid.
Right. It needs
environment.
Needs that environment. Any variation, even a little, even on a warm day, it's going to live a few hours or maybe a, you know, a day at the most. So they have only 20 receptors, 10 to 20, because they barely need them. They're just there or they're dead.
Mm-hmm.
And the mosquito, I think, is more like the stable fly. The stable fly has 5,000. I know that the mosquito in one species has 72 types of odor receptors on its antenna.
Is this the mosquito now?
Mosquito.
Wow, that's amazing. 72.
72 oh, types. So, of course, you don't know how many receptors. Mm. At least 27 are tuned to detect the chemicals found in perspiration. A large part of the mosquito's sense of smell is devoted to sniffing out human targets, right? And they prefer some people over others.
Yeah, why is that? Anybody know?
Well, they're very sensitive to
specific odors?
Of these chemicals in the body odor. And it's very complicated. I don't know all which chemicals they're sensitive to, but they're fragments of the odor, okay? They're also sensitive to carbon dioxide and heat. We'll just, I'm getting a signal that we need to end at this point. I would just say, I see it in my own family in terms of the kinds of, in terms of the preference of certain people. They very rarely ever bite me. Mm-hmm. It's not that they never do, but if my ex-husband or my children are around, I'm safe because they bite them immediately.
You should have kept that husband.
I know. And he was a good mosquito preventer. And my children have allergic reactions to mosquito bites. They get these huge welts when they're bitten by a mosquito.
Yeah, Janet is just the opposite. She's the attractor.
Uh-huh.
So she's good protection for me. There I always
go.
Hide behind, though.
There you go.
The mosquito country.
All right. I guess we're going to take a break at this point, and we'll be back shortly.
Good, with part two of Mosquitoes on the Attack.
Right.
The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune into The Food Scene Tuesdays at 3 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network. Hosted by Michael Harlan Turkel, photo editor of Edible Brooklyn and Edible Manhattan magazines, he'll further explore the amalgamation of food and art by talking to artists from a multitude of media. Guests will range from photographers, food stylists, interior architects for restaurants, industrial designers, all the players that make you want to eat with your eyes. Get ready to feast your ears. Every Tuesday at 3 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
Okay, we are back to talk about mosquitoes some more. I want to talk about a little bit more about biting, and then I want to talk about mating. Jack, was that a 10-minute segment or 15?
15.
Okay, so we have 15 minutes more. So just sort of interesting to think about how they find the host. So first, it's in several steps. The first step of obtaining food, if you think about this, is I call it restaurant style, or sort of honey, what's for dinner? And that's just sitting and waiting for the food to arrive, right? Then another version of that is appetitive searching. That's sort of driven by hunger. The insect indulges in non-oriented behavior that's likely to bring it into contact with a host. We see that in the conservatory, the butterflies. In the butterfly stage, the only thing that they're really interested in is mating and getting a little nectar so they have energy to mate. But they fly around a lot and they buzz the visitors. And clearly they're looking to see whether they can get any kind of scent to get an idea whether this is a potential mate or whether this is a potential food source.
Yeah, and sometimes they're looking for minerals. You know, people
also,
perspiring
that's
the
right.
salt. And when they puddle, the butterflies.
That's right.
But the mosquito, can the female survive without the blood?
Yes.
She can eat nectar and
she
other
drinks
stuff.
Nectar. She
nectar,
just
right?
won't make eggs.
She just
right.
needs its protein for making eggs.
Right, right. So when they get a odor, they get a whiff of the host, then they switch from this random inner-directed searching to host-oriented behavior, and they, as they get closer to the host, they get more signals, which is from the heat, right? Because the carbon dioxide plumes and the other odor plumes travel quite far, especially at dawn and dusk, which is when most of them feed.
They're active, yeah.
Right. Although some are diurnal, but most of them are dawn and dusk. As you know, if you're out in the country and it starts to get dark, that's when the mosquitoes generally come out.
I think that time of the day, it's called crepuscular.
Crepuscular, that's right. Very good. So then when they get closer to the host, they can sense the heat, which is a confirming signal that this is a warm-blooded vertebrate. So then they sit on the host. Mosquitoes tend to kind of sit on you, and they get a feel for whether this is worthwhile taking a chance and penetrating. So they're sensitive to vibration, surface texture, skin, hair, thickness of the feathers. Okay, so they decide to bite. And this to me is very interesting. For all blood-feeding insects, there's a safe feeding period between the initiation of feeding and the onset in the host of irritability due to pain and itchiness.
Right, that's right. Fast.
Yeah, so you feel, what is this? And you smack your arm or something, but the bite is already there and the mosquito is gone, right? So that mosquito successfully fed in the safe feeding period. And what mosquitoes do is they interrupt the host's natural responses to make the safe feeding period last longer.
Uh-huh.
They do that in several ways. It's all about the saliva. The saliva is a lubricant, so that lubricates the proboscis as they stick it into you, and that minimizes the sensation. There's also an anesthetic in the saliva, which numbs the area. There's also our natural response if a blood vessel is interfered with is vasoconstriction. So they also have a vasodilator, which stops the blood vessel from closing.
A whole cocktail of chemicals.
And they also have anticoagulants, because when you get a blood vessel is ruptured, the blood clots to close off the opening. And if you have clots, it would clog up the food channel in the proboscis that delivers the blood to the mosquito's body. And so the anticoagulant maximizes the speed of intake by not allowing the blood to coagulate. So all of this creates the longest possible safe feeding period, which may be just a matter of seconds, but all of this is going on. Okay, I want to talk about mating before we run out of time.
Oh, good.
I'm leaving out some interesting stuff about food. There's one species, they bite different parts of the body. I find this
very
interesting.
Oh, that's interesting.
And one species is attracted to feet and dirty socks, and they did an experiment, and they put Limburger cheese out, and it also was attracted to the Limburger cheese. I love that. So there's obviously some chemical in that odor that they're sensitive to.
So maybe you shouldn't eat Limburger cheese when you're in mosquito country.
Take your chances, right. Or put the Limburger cheese there, and then you'll be over here.
Oh, okay, with the dirty socks.
The antenna of male mosquitoes contains auditory receptors to detect the buzz that Bernie was making before. That's the characteristic whine of the female. There's also wing beat research, which is very interesting, where they found that the male and female use sound to find each other and then harmonize before they mate. Now, I was looking up some other question I had about mating. If you Google mosquito mating, one of the first listings is actually a video, and it's video with sound, and you can see this harmonizing of the buzzing. It's very nice. It's a short video.
So is that the wing speed, too, that produces the buzzing?
I think so. I think it's the wing vibrations like with bees. Yeah.
Huh.
Okay, so let's see. The female needs a blood meal to form eggs. In some species, they have two blood meals before they have the eggs, and then they have to rest a few days in most species while the blood is digested and the eggs develop. That it made me wonder about when does she mate? Does she mate before the blood meal or after? Naturally, it's complicated. Some species mate before the blood meal. Some species mate after. She lays the eggs and again seeks a blood meal and repeats this cycle until she dies. Mosquitoes only live a week or two, in captivity maybe a month. And that all depends on temperature and humidity and the availability of hosts, and of course, not getting swatted.
Of course.
But under the best conditions, they only live a couple of weeks. There's not a lot of information about mating in mosquitoes. This is what I was trying to find some more information, other than about these acoustic signals that they make. We do know that newly emerged male mosquitoes are, in most species, they're not really ready to mate. The external genitalia aren't fully developed, and their accessory glands mature after they're born. So for many species, they require several days to mature before they can actually mate. Mm-hmm. So Anopheles mosquito, for example, takes 5 to 7 days before they can successfully mate.
Yeah, and the whole life cycle isn't very long.
Very short, right. Yeah. And sometimes they mate sooner, but then they don't have sperm. Mm-hmm. Females are ready to mate pretty much as soon as they emerge.
And it's internal fertilization then, right?
Yes. Yeah. In some cases, in some cases, the males wait next to the pupa, which we know happens with some species of butterflies too. And they even grab the female in mosquitoes now. They'll grab the pupa floating in the water before the female emerges so that they can mate with her immediately. And some of them also, Anopheles does this, they insert a mating plug, which butterflies do also.
That's interesting, right.
Remind
everybody what that is.
A mating plug is a genital plug that makes it impossible for the female to mate subsequent to the guy who put in the mating plug, except that females can push it out after a while, but it limits her mating. There are other males that introduce a hormone with the sperm, because we know the sperm comes in a sperm packet with nutrients and things in insects. And the hormone, what is it called? They call it a matrone, which I like. That sounds very Italian. I'm going to transfer some matrone. A matrone. And that's a hormone which makes the female refractory to success with mating. So it makes her not want to mate again.
Okay, right? Turns her off.
Turns her off is a good way to put it, right.
Matrone.
And
it's the opposite of Viagra.
Exactly, right. And it also induces host-seeking behavior. So it's a pretty good hormone. He inseminates her. He gets her not to be interested in mating with anybody else, and he gets her interested in seeking blood that she'll make eggs to fertilize, that he'll fertilize with his sperm that he's already deposited.
Okay, so in this case, she gets the blood after mating.
In this case, she gets it afterwards.
Yeah, that sounds more sensible.
Yeah. And there are others that do that, and then there are other species where the accessory glands don't induce a change in the female behavior. This is something, of course, entomologists love to study. This is the fun kind of stuff. How do they mate? Also, very interesting. We don't really know how they find mates in a lot of species, but in many species, they mate in swarms. Now, you remember we talked about bees. They have these drone congregation areas, right? Mm-hmm. Where the female flies into virgin queen flies into the drone congregation area, mates with several males, whose genitals drop off and the males die, right? Because when they mate, the genitals get snapped off. Mm. And this is the popcorn syndrome.
Okay, fatal. Right. I don't want to say that.
That's
fatal,
right.
Fatal intercourse.
Right. Now, fortunately, you'll be happy to hear this does not seem to happen with mosquitoes.
Oh, I'm very glad.
Right. I knew you would feel good about that. Actually, what happens is the males make a swarm in some species, okay, but let's just talk about, it makes you crazy to qualify. We can talk about Anopheles, for example. They make a swarm that's like a cylinder, several meters high, and the female flies into it. Number of males are attracted to her. She mates with one, and they fly out of the swarm in copula.
Oh,
okay? And presumably, then she goes about her business, and he goes about her business. But there was nothing in the material that I read that says that the males die. Okay. It probably would have been in there if someone knew it. Sure. Because that's a big topic.
So they live to mate again, maybe, or maybe not.
Yes. They don't live very long, but it would appear. Now, I could be wrong. This might just be, I didn't find this, but I didn't find it. Larger males, just interesting. Larger males are more attractive. Larger females are more attractive.
More chance of success.
More chance of success, right. And many of these swarms occur like the drone congregation area. They occur in specific places for some reason. Nobody knows why. Some kind of landmark, a visual marker, that is where they, and there are a lot of references to that, so it's obviously very well documented. Other species mate right near the vertebrate host, so that they're attracted, that the female's attracted to the host odors. The male, even though he's not interested in the blood of the host, knows that's where the females are, so they mate near the blood source, and the female then gets the blood to form the eggs. So it's all very efficient. One of the ways, and we don't have time to talk about disease and control, but this disease is a huge problem
with mosquitoes,
because 1 in 17 children that die each year are killed by mosquito-borne diseases, primarily malaria. Mm. Now, hopefully this is a stale statistic and it's not true anymore, but that's the statistic that floats around. The Anopheles mosquito, which is the one that transmits malaria, carries 4 types of protozoa, and they reproduce. The reason that mosquitoes are such efficient vectors, vector means a source of disease, a carrier, is that the pathogens can replicate. They live inside the mosquito and they reproduce, and so then the mosquito carries them somewhere else. Bed bugs, for example, they have found, I forgot the number, 27, but maybe that's not the right number, but a number like that. They have found that many different types of pathogens in bed bugs that they've dissected. Uh-huh. Not necessarily all of those in one bed bug, but bed bugs pick up pathogens also from people's blood, but they don't. The pathogens don't live in the bed bug, and so bed bugs, as far as anybody has been able to find, don't transmit disease because they can't be vectors because the pathogens die
in their blood,
in their system. At the most, there's a little. Sometimes I think with the hepatitis B. There was a little bit excreted in the feces, but since people don't go around eating bedbug feces, you're probably okay. Mm-hmm. But with mosquitoes, they're very dangerous. They even carry heartworms, which is dangerous to dogs.
Dogs, sure.
So that if they bite an infected dog, the heartworms will develop inside the mosquito, and they'll transmit the juvenile stage to a healthy dog and infect the dog.
What can they cross over to humans? The heartworm, do you know?
No.
You can't?
No.
Okay.
West Nile is transmitted to humans. West Nile they get from birds.
Birds, right.
There's a certain time in their life cycle that they feed on birds, and then they start feeding on humans, and so they transmit the West Nile to humans. So it's a big problem. And you know about the various ways that they I don't even want to start talking about the ways that they try to eliminate mosquitoes, because everybody knows about that in general. There's an interest in inseminating wild female mosquitoes by releasing sterile males that will mate with them, and that's always something in the bug world. It's one of the options that people consider. But there's not enough research yet.
Information on it. How
right.
successful
it's
it is.
Done experimentally, and it works because but they need to know a lot more about reproductive habits, about cues that control swarming, and about mate location behavior. All of these things that are hard to really break down, but you need to know them, the frequency of multiple species swarming, what will the female be receptive to in order to hybridize or just have them mate with a sterile male.
Sterile male.
Right.
Now, what about preventing bites? Do you have anything on that? Well, that's another chapter.
There's a lot of material. There are a lot of natural repellents. Interestingly, some animals produce their own repellents. Millipedes, for example, produce an acid from near their head that on contact with the air turns into cyanide.
Oh, nice. Right? Yeah, those critters are nasty, those
go
millipedes.
Bite them, yeah. Right. And in fact, entomologists sometimes will take a millipede and put it in a collecting jar to kill the insects that they're capturing. Right. It's so toxic. Huh. And monkeys rub millipedes into their fur to transfer some of the repellent to get relief from flies and ticks.
Oh, they can do that. The monkeys, where do they get the repellent from?
From the millipedes.
Oh, from the millipedes.
They're aware that the millipedes are that toxic.
Now, how do the monkeys know this? You know?
Monkeys are very smart.
You think they read like books and stuff?
Probably. No. They have Google. They Google it.
That's right. What it is. Because they used to read Lonely Planet. They were very good on stuff like that.
But. Right. And then also some birds have, some birds in Papua New Guinea produce toxins that come out through their feathers. And that keeps the mosquitoes away. And all of these things, of course, are interesting in terms of finding what we can use as repellents for people.
Yeah, we used to use a lot of that deadly DEET.
Correct.
In the repellents. Now they use pyrethrins.
That's right.
Which comes from a flower, I think, an African daisy.
Some of the repellents are carried a long way. Some of the natural repellents can be smelled, you know, half a mile downwind. And that's even some plants have mosquito repelling properties, right?
Yeah. And you know what I found when we traveled, especially the tropical climates, if there's a fan in the room when you go to sleep, turn the fan on.
Right, right.
Because they're not great flyers, these mosquitoes. And the breeze from the fan will keep them away from you.
Right. That's true with bees also, that they're not powerful flyers.
Right.
And so any kind of, if you move the air, also it keeps the odor plume from inviting them because you're disturbing the odor plume with the fan.
Yeah, we found that on our last trip when we were in Belize. We were in this lovely resort, and they had fans and air conditioning. But we turned the fans on because the fans kept the mosquitoes away if they got in. Even though the place was well screened, they always get in. You open the door and, you know, stuff, they hide out a lot.
Right, very good. Okay, I know that we're almost out of time.
Yeah.
Let me just one last thing. I would say about 40 people in the United States die each year from insect stings, but to the credit of mosquitoes, it's rarely from mosquitoes. They rarely cause the kind of allergic reaction that leads to anaphylaxis. That is what people usually die of. Well, from bees, it's not necessarily anaphylaxis. It's just if they have killer bees, there's so much venom because hundreds or even 1,000 bees bite the host at the same time that they're overwhelmed by the venom. Anaphylaxis is also can also happen. That can happen even from bed bug bites if you have an allergic reaction.
Right.
I had anaphylaxis from mangoes.
Oh, yes.
I'm allergic to mangoes and ahi, as in saltfish and ahi.
Oh, okay, ahi.
Both of which are delicious.
Yeah.
But I have an anaphylactic reaction, which, in case you don't know what that
mangoes
is.
Mangoes are in the same family as a poison ivy.
That's right.
That's right.
Poison sumac, I think.
Poison sumac,
yeah.
Is it?
Anaphylaxis is difficulty breathing. And
right.
your mucous membranes,
your
mucous
throat.
Membranes swell,
right, yeah.
and you get very itchy, and it's really very unpleasant. Anyway, this does not happen. Probably everything happens when there's 3,500 species. It probably happens to somebody, but this is not a danger from mosquitoes.
Yes.
The real danger is the disease transmission.
And luckily, in the United States, we no longer have yellow fever. And
right.
What's the other one that we had also?
Dengue fever.
Dengue fever.
The other one.
And
right.
There was another one also, mosquito-borne.
Mm-hmm.
But and then there's the classic story about building the Panama Canal.
Right.
When they didn't know what was killing the people. They didn't know the vector.
Right.
That this mosquito was the vector. And one of the health guys who was in charge before, the famous guy who found out mosquitoes, he believed in opening the windows to get out the stale air.
Right.
And they opened it up at night. And
that was
why
the mosquitoes got in.
Yeah.
Right.
So that was an interesting story. And we used to have it in the United States, in the southern part of the United States.
That's
yellow
right.
fever. That's what I'm thinking of. we had in the United States, and maybe malaria, I don't remember, but through mosquito control, they got rid of that mosquito that causes
it. And there's a tremendous efforts with malaria. The malaria mosquitoes bite between 11 p.m. and 1 a.m., the Anopheles mosquitoes. So bed nets are very important, impregnated bed nets. And that's what I think Bill Gates has been, his group.
Oh, yes, they've been giving out
distributing bed nets in areas where malaria is a big problem. And when we travel, you take pills to avoid malaria. I wonder if it keeps the mosquitoes. It doesn't keep the mosquitoes away.
No, it kills the parasites.
It just kills the parasites if you should get them.
Right.
If a mosquito should bite you and give you the parasite, it kills them.
Did you ever take that stuff?
Yes, I have.
They give you nightmares.
No, I was in Africa traveling once, and a woman on the trip was acting really crazy, and the guide realized that it was because of that medicine. I never had. I was always okay with it, but I've seen it.
Yeah.
Did you have a reaction to it?
Yeah, I had a reaction to it once, yeah.
Wow.
But I think there's a newer drug.
There's a new one, yes.
From England or something.
Take it for a much shorter time, and it's much less disturbing.
Yeah.
Okay, so that is the end of a short dissertation on mosquitoes. There's a tremendous amount more to say.
Okay, so that's going to be your next book, Carol? What do you think?
Mosquitoes? I hope so.
Oh, great.
I hope so.
Follow up bed bugs with mosquitoes.
I'm telling you.
Ah, you bloodsucker. You, all those females, you got to watch them.
Very good.
Signing off today. Thanks, Carol. That was great.
All right.
And we'll be back again.
I never know what we'll be talking about.
Right.
Okay, this is Carol Butler.
And Bernie Wyatt signing off
for The Naturalist.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. The following message has been brought to you by Fairway Market. What's the buzz about honey? Well, those busy little bees are up to something, and it is delicious. The Fairway label honey is superb. Fairway only hires worker bees that are the best at what they do. This makes for a great tasting, high quality honey at an amazing value with the Fairway stamp of approval. And on top of being delicious, honey is a great substitute for other sweeteners and can even benefit your health. This includes better energy, respiratory improvements, and balanced blood sugar levels. It's a no-brainer. Get your Fairway honey today.